Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And as always, we have another excellent UFC event this weekend, ladies and gentlemen. UFC 314, Volkanovski versus Lopez, goes down this upcoming Saturday. It's going to be a fun weekend. Let me just tell you, me and my boys got some fun stuff planned. Lexi's coming down. Little does she know, we're watching UFC all night, which is going to be awesome. It's going to be fun. On today's episode, we cover every single fight, giving our official predictions. And if you haven't already, check out the Instagram and TikTok, my personal one. We don't have a actually the podcast one we posted it on, but I did drop a 13 leg parlay. I don't know if those picks are gonna line up with the ones we make today, but the ones on today's episode are the official predictions we are making. Also on today's episode, we're gonna discuss some new UFC fights that have been announced. Gonna be talking about the final three games of the final four teams in March Madness, as we now know our champion. We're gonna discuss everything that went down in those games as well. I went to WWE Monday Night Raw this past Monday, which was legendary. It was so much fun. I'm going to discuss my experience there and why I'm encouraging you to go to a WWE event if it's near you. Let me tell you, some people think it's corny. Some people even use the word gay. Let me just tell you, it is neither. It is so much fun. And literally the majority of the audience is grown adults. There's a lot of kids, but there's a lot of grown adults. And me and my boy Tyler, 22 years old each, and we are having the time of our lives at this event. But guys, let's not waste any more time. Let's get right into it with new UFC fights. Now, we haven't had, I would call it, the biggest announcements as of late, but we have had some that we can discuss. First off, UFC Atlanta, Georgia, going down June 14th. The UFC is going to Atlanta. We're still not coming to Minneapolis. That's just not a thing. Minnesota, Wisconsin, just doesn't happen. Even Chicago, they haven't even been to Chicago. I guess they're going to Des Moines, but I'm not driving to Des Moines, Iowa. Anyways, UFC Atlanta, flyweight matchup. Cody Durden back in action as he takes on Jose Ochoa. Jose 7-1, lost his UFC debut earlier this year. I can't even remember to who, honestly. It might have been, what is it, Kavanaugh? What's his name? Loner Kavanaugh or something? He might have beaten him. I honestly cannot recall, but Cody Durden, we've known him. This man has beaten Matt Schnell, Charles Johnson, Jake Hadley. He's a dog. He's an absolute dog, and like some of his losses are Bruno Silva, you got Joshua Van, he's fought, I think, Tegir Limbekov. He's fought some very tough competitors in the UFC, and this should be a super fun fight. So I encourage everyone to watch this one. Keep it on your radar. I might go with Cody Durden, but Jose Ochoa, we'll have to keep our eye on him. He doesn't really have any notable names. He beat Omar Torres on Damage Contender Series, but that's about it. Nonetheless, it's a new fight. Also, coming at you, May 17th, UFC Vegas 106, a little prelim action, most likely, as Matthias Jaguar Camilo, 9-2, making his UFC debut as he takes on Gabe Green, 2-3 in the UFC. Holds wins over Johan Lanes and Phil Rowe. Unfortunately for Gabe, he's most known as the guy who got knocked out in 13 seconds by, oh my gosh, Brian Battle is his name. And other than that, he took Ian Gary the distance. Look, Gabe Green, yet to live up to much. He's 11-5. This will be make or break as he welcomes Matthias Camilo to the UFC. Jaguar, cool nickname. Born in 2001, trains at the same gym as Sean Strickland, Extreme Couture. I mean, this guy has the potential to be a fun opponent. Another new fight for you. UFC 317 going down June 28th in Las Vegas. UFC 317 doesn't even have a main event, but it has a fight card. Heavyweight action as Renata Dinez, who is 8-1 in the UFC. His lone loss, Marcin Tybura. Takes on Justin Toffa. Justin Toffa, 7-5 professionally, 4-5 in the UFC. I mean, dude just has the worst luck. I swear, like, Justin Toffa just fights killers. He most recently had to fight Tashaun Teixeira. Got absolutely ran through. I mean, I think he just has terrible luck, but his knockouts of Austin Lane, Parker Porter, Juan Adams, all entertaining. This is going to be a tricky fight because, honestly, Justin Toffa is not as well-rounded as Renata Dinez is, and Renata was kind of humble in that Marcin Tybura fight, so this will be interesting. My early prediction is Renata Dinez, but things can change. Heavyweight division is not deep. Let me tell you, it's probably the most undeep division ever. The top six would beat everyone. There's really no newcomers that are coming up in the men's heavyweight division that can actually do damage. So we'll see how this one goes. I think Renata Dinas has the most potential to be successful of the two. Two more fights to bring to you. Rescheduled yet again, UFC 316 in Newark, New Jersey, June 7th, has Calvin Gastelum versus Joe Pyfer. This fight has been rebooked so many times. This is like the third or fourth time this fight's been rebooked. We've been waiting to see Joe Pyfer back in action. His lone loss is a main event to Jack Manson, where he just couldn't go five full rounds. he learned that, but I think he has grown since then. He's gone out and gotten a nasty knockout of Marc-Andre Barriot. I kid you not, that thing was freaking amazing. Put his lights out cold. As for Calvin Gastelum, I mean, it's been tough going, but his losses have aged pretty good. I mean, most recently, Sean Brady was the last man to beat him. That has aged pretty brilliantly. I think Calvin last fought, I want to say Daniel Rodriguez. Before that, it was Chris Curtis. So he's permanently moving to middleweight. Joe Pyfer is a very tough opponent to first greet you. And I don't know. I'm easily going to pick Joe Pyfer. But if Calvin Gastelum wants to bring back that old school style he had in 2018, I would be more than happy to watch it take place. And the final fight that we have, and one that I am personally excited for, UFC Vegas 107 going down May 31st. I believe that's the card Macy Barber and Erin Blanchfield are main eventing, which is actually a women's fight I'm intrigued to see, unlike some of the others we get. But the Welsh gangster, Oban Elliott, in the men's welterweight division is back. 3-0 in the UFC, 12-2 professionally, most recently knocked out Basil Hafez in a brilliant performance. Takes on Ramiz Brahimaj. That's right, Ramiz Brahimaj, back in action. He is from Albania, I believe. Very interesting name, Ramiz Brahimaj. But he's from New Jersey. I'm pretty sure that's where he's grown up, but was born in Albania. 3-3 in the UFC, and most recently put Mickey Gall's lights out cold with a knockout. It was fantastic. And it's honestly a shame these two are fighting. They actually fought on UFC 309 together, ironically, and they both had amazing knockouts. So I would love to see them fight other people, but this is 50-50. As of right now, Oban Elliott's going to be going for the striking. Ramiz Brahimaj for this fight, I think, is going to go on the grappling. By the way, of his 11 wins, I'm pretty sure 10 of them are by submission. So grappler versus striker, the Welsh gangster Oban Elliott. I slept on him against Basil Hafez. I will not sleep on him again. I'm going to pick him to get the win. But other than that, no new UFC fights. That's all we get, just a couple little fights here and there along the way. Now, there is rumors that Aaron Pico and Mosfer Evlov are fighting May 17th. That is kind of coming up soon, and Aaron Pico has joined the UFC, which I'm very excited about, but I don't know if they're going to get that main event booked that soon. So that's all your new UFC fights. We'll continue to keep everyone updated as episodes continue to roll out, 2 a week usually. Something else that goes down every single week, which you may not be aware of, is WWE Monday Night Raw. On this channel, we love WWE. In fact, next week is WrestleMania. Can't wait to cover that. We actually have a lot of podcast episodes coming out next week. It's going to be a busy week in the life of Zachary. But this Monday, I wasn't busy because I was able to go to Monday Night Raw with my boy Tyler. We're big WWE fans, been fans since we were little kids. And now us going to this event is just us living out our dreams. Pretty good tickets. We went from kind of the upper deck to lower bowl, I would call it. We're going to graduate to floor seats. Don't you worry. And it was so much fun. Let me just tell you, you know, from the get-go, the environment is so fun. Even the wrestlers that aren't big name, it's fun cheering for them. It really is. Tony Hinchcliffe was there. Bert Kreischer was there. They had just the most random people showing up. And it's definitely because of Netflix. Netflix apparently flew them out. But I mean, hey, always fun to see them. Bert Kreischer actually ended the show by choke slamming two jobbers, if you want to call them that. But overall, really good matches. You know, they had this women's Intercontinental Championship match between Bayley and Lyra Valkyrie, and I was very hesitant on it, but it started the show. It was a great wrestling match, and Lyra Valkyrie won, just as I thought she would. We then had a 3v3 tag team match, or six-man tag, if you want to call it that. And you have Chad Gable. He's been going under this alias of El Excelento Americano or something. It's like the El Grande Americano, where he's like kind of mocking luchadors or something. And he was taking on basically Rey Mysterio's proteges. They're called LWO, Latino World Order. I don't even know any of the guys' names, but they were doing the craziest things. There were two moves. One was where this one guy ran off the back of two others and did basically a somersault in the air onto someone outside the ring. Then another guy jumped up to the top rope off onto the rope outside of the ring and it was spinning in the air, almost like throwing a blade or something. It was so, so cool. Such a great matchup. And you even had the Creed brothers. Those are Chad Gable's cronies or partners in the match, if you will. And they were getting up there and they were jumping off the top rope, which was beautiful to see. It was so much fun. Such a great match. And it really, really was entertaining. Let me tell you that. And Rey Mysterio got booked in a match against Chad Gable or El Grande Americano at WrestleMania. I'm trying to think what other matches they gave us. The New Day, they fought for the WWE or wrestled for the WWE Tag Team Championships. And they lost by disqualification or won, I guess, by disqualification. But they're just setting up a WrestleMania match. Nonetheless, the heel Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods is so good. Let me just tell you, I love seeing them as heels. It really is entertaining. You also had Ludwig Kaiser appearing, you know, Tiffany Stratton, who is the women's champion. She's always appearing on SmackDown. She's from Minnesota, so I wonder if Ludwig Kaiser made the trek to Prior Lake to go give her family a little visit. You also had Liv Morgan appearing there. You know, she cut some little promo. You had Rhea Ripley, Io Sky, Bianca Belair. They cut a promo. It was kind of interesting. And then you had Penta versus Dominic Mysterio, which was so good. Penta versus Dominic was so good, and it ended with Bron Breakker hitting the craziest spear I've ever seen. He ran completely down the entrance ramp, literally hit Carlito with so much force, he flipped in the air. It looked like something out of a video game. It was phenomenal. It's been trending all over social media, and I was there in person to witness it. Truly, it was so fun. It was lots of fun. You then had Finn Balor coming out, and they had Finn Balor as the final man hoisting the belt in there. It was a very weird call on their part, but nonetheless, Bron Breakker is an absolute savage, and seeing how fast he moves and how strong he is, it is absolutely insane. And Penta, Dom, we know how good they are. They put on a very surprising match. I can't lie. The moves they were pulling out, very intriguing. Very much love that. Then capped off the show with a little promo with Seth Rollins, Paul Heyman, and CM Punk. And I love seeing CM Punk, but kind of would like to end with a banger match. I am not going to complain. I'm sad we didn't see Cody Rhodes or John Cena. But actually, speaking of John Cena, he's only appearing on the final SmackDown before WrestleMania. So you know how busy he is. He's got that Rock. He's got that freaking, who are some other part-timers? Basically, the Rock and John Cena are the major part-timers. Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns. He only appears on a few shows. So at least we were able to see Seth Rollins and CM Punk because they were super entertaining. They're good entertainers, I shall say. Other than that, great experience. Had some great chicken there. I had this buffalo dry rub chicken and fries. Fantastic. Fantastic. Really caught me off guard how delicious it was. 10 out of 10. Definitely recommend. Me and Tyler will definitely be going to another event. I mean, SummerSlam's going to be here next summer. Not this upcoming one, but the one after. And we're getting good seats for that. I got to save up a couple grand, but hopefully I'll be rolling in the Benjamins. You know what I'm saying. I have big aspirations for my life, and one day I'll be able to go to any WWE event I want and sit front row. But yes, WWE Monday Night Raw. Such a fun time. I encourage you all to check it out. Something else I was able to check out on the way home was the championship for March Madness. That's right, March Madness has finally concluded, and our battle of the 4-1 seeds has commenced, and we now know the results. So, when we last spoke, we had kind of touched on the situation with the first two games. So, if you didn't know, Florida was able to get past Auburn in a very close matchup, 79-73, and Houston had an insane comeback against Duke. Duke was up 6 with under a minute left. Like, with a minute left, they were up and had the ball. Houston ended up winning by 3. It was insane. Such a choke job from Duke. It was a very entertaining game. Now, the game we haven't talked about was the championship game, Florida versus Houston. And, hey, Houston was on a roll. They were up 3 heading into halftime. They were doing fantastic. And this was a very unexpected final two. You know, Houston, they were a one seed, but they were also the one seed that not a lot of people are going far. Oddly enough, they make the championship. They were winning. They were playing good. But when it came down to crunch time, Florida was just able to string it together. 36-4 final record, 40 games played for the Gators, 36 wins. Amazing work. And I will say, the one highlight, not really a highlight for Houston, but the one thing that stood out to me from this game is that on the final two possessions Houston had, no one would take a shot, and both times they just turned the ball over in the most dumb situations, including the ending sequence where this one player, I don't even know if it was LJ Cryer, I don't even think it was him, but he had the ball and he went to shoot it and he like lost the ball and couldn't pick it up, or else it would be a double dribble or travel, and so Florida literally dove on the ball and won the game, and it was the most anticlimactic ending for such a fun game. Florida, 65-63, gets it done, wins their third national championship, and this team was just a bunch of dogs. That's all I gotta say. Alex Condon, 12.7 rebounds. Walter Clayton drops 11 points, 7 assists, 5 boards. Will Richard, 18 points, 8 rebounds. He was a stud. Thomas Howell, 5-5 rebounds and points. Denzel Aberdeen, 7 points, 2 rebounds. Good team effort from everyone on Florida. For Houston, LJ Cryer at 19. Other than that, you know, Emmanuel Sharp, 8. Javier Francis, 8. Malik Wilson, 9. You know, it was pretty much the LJ Cryer showing. At the end of the day, that's just not going to get it done. Both teams shot pretty bad, under 40% each. Three-pointer percentages, 25% and 24%. Nothing was falling this game. 65-63, generally a pretty low-scoring game for both teams. Free throws ended up being the key for Florida as they had 8 more and made 81% of theirs compared to 64% for Houston. Yikes. 40-39 in rebounds. A lot of rebounds gotten in this game. More assists to Florida, more blocks to Houston, 13 turnovers for Florida. You know, it was a lot of fouls too for Houston. I said, look at that, 19-10. So Houston just, I wouldn't even call it choking. I just think Florida was a better team and they fought hard. But when it came down to it, you know, they just didn't really have the whole setup. They didn't have a whole setup going. I will say that final possession was really hard to watch. Really tough to watch. But as we look at the path for Florida, I mean, not too bad of a journey to the Final Four, especially to win the championship, I should better say. Round one, I mean, every one seed just takes on a bum. Norfolk State beat them 95-69. Next up, probably one of their toughest games they had to have, probably the toughest, 1-8. They take UConn to a two-point game. Crazy. Then what everyone thought would be a close game, Florida and Maryland ended up not being a close game, all right, as they manhandle them 87-71, Elite Eight. They beat the number three seed, Texas Tech, 84-79. They then best Auburn. They then best Houston. I think Florida had a lot of competitive games. They really earned this March Madness. And I will say the favorite Duke losing was shocking, but Cooper Flagg had the final shot. He couldn't bury it. We'll see it in the league. There were some talks that Cooper Flagg wasn't going to go to the NBA, but I just don't believe that. I think it's just too hard to pass up when you're a guaranteed number one overall pick. It's just hard to not pass that up. It's very rare that you don't follow through and go with that. But March Madness 2025, it was good. It was good. There wasn't that much madness. I think what you saw is a lot of, there was all the top seeds were so good. So good, and especially the Final Four games were just three competitive games. I mean, really, you're never really going to see 3-1 seed matchups in the Final Four for a long time. There's always going to be that outlier. So this year, you know, it's always interesting to see because now we know that when you have all the one seeds playing, it actually is the highest level of basketball possible. Because, you know, whenever you have NC State in there, UCLA, I remember the year that UNC made, you know, they can make it to the Final Four. Heck, they can even win one game. But they always run into one of the one seeds, pretty much always the one seed that dominates them. Take UConn last 2 years, for example. So interesting stuff. March Madness, we'll see you next year. We're tuning in every single year until it shuts down or Zachary's in the grave, which I hope isn't soon because there's a lot of stuff I want to experience. Let me just tell you guys, life is all about experiencing things. And this weekend, you're going to experience something outer-worldly as we go and watch UFC 314. That is right, ladies and gentlemen. UFC 314 goes down this weekend, and I'm pumped. I don't know about y'all, but I am buzzing for this event. I'm telling you, it's going to be good. I always love when we get some pay-per-views. It's always good to see. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right into it. I've been hesitant, y'all. I was going to record this Tuesday, then I pushed it to Wednesday, and I'm actually recording this on Thursday, the day this is going to come out, April 10th, because I don't know who I want to pick for a lot of these. But as we all know, I make all my predictions live on the podcast. I put myself on the spot, so I have to make the predictions. Let's get right into it. Women's bantamweight action opens up the card. Shocker, I know. As the number 13th ranked women's bantamweight, Nora Kornole takes on the unranked Haley All Hail Cohen. Haley All Hail Cohen. What an interesting nickname you have there, All Haley. Whatever the frick type of name that is. No, I'm just kidding, Haley. I'm just being mean. Nora, 8-2. Haley, 7-3. 5'8" to 5'7". Haley has a 1-inch height advantage. There it is. 67-inch reach advantage for both of these ladies. And orthodox for Nora in the stance. Southpaw for Haley Cohen. We'll start with Nora, who is the -175 underdog. No, favorite. +145. I'm getting all scrambled here. I'm all excited. +145. Haley Cohen is the underdog. Nora, 35 years old, is from France, believe it or not. 7 finishes and 8 wins. She has 6 knockouts and 1 submission. Currently 2-1 in the UFC. Beat Jocelyn Edwards in her debut. Then was able to knock out Melissa Mullins in April of 2024. Last fought in September, where she dropped a split decision to Jacqueline Cavalcante, which was a very interesting split decision, I can't lie. But Nora Kornole, you know, it's been a mediocre career so far. I think this is where it really starts to pick up. I don't know why she's really in the UFC Women's Bantamweight rankings, but it kind of speaks to how shallow, you shall say, the women's bantamweight division is. It's very easy to break into. So Nora Kornole, she's from France. She has a very good finish rate. She's pretty good. Her opponent, All Hail, Haley Cohen, the underdog, 33 years old, from Waco, Texas. Believe it or not, that's right, Waco, where the whole Waco incident happened. She actually went to Baylor University. Fun fact, if you want to know that. 4 of her 7 wins have came by finish, 2 knockouts and 2 subs, and of her 3 losses, she has been submitted in 2 of them. The other one was a decision. She's had a couple fight cancellations, was supposed to fight in May of 2024, also in September of 2023. It's been a rough road to get here, but last fought in April of 2023, where she lost the decision to Jamie Lynn Horth. So this will only be her second UFC fight, and being out that long, you know, we have a couple fighters on here who haven't fought since 2023, and I do think that is a detriment. Nora Cannoli, I thought she won the Jacqueline fight. I've been high on her for her few UFC fights that I've seen. I'm going to pick Nora Cannoli to win by decision. Plus, I think she can probably get a finish in this as I think about it, but with women's MMA, I never bet finishes. It's just your safer prediction is always going to be the decision. Moving along, men's middleweight division, as, interesting, Trayshawn Gore, plus 280, takes on Marco, minus 355, Tulio. Trayshawn, Mr. Vicious Gore, and Marco Matutu Tulio. Mr. Vicious, really, Trayshawn Gore, that's your nickname. Trayshawn, 6-2, Marco, 13-1, both better 6 foot, 75-inch reach to 74-inch reach, gives Trayshawn 1 inch there. Switch stance for Trayshawn Gore, it's an orthodox stance for Marco Tulio. Let's start with Trayshawn, I'm more familiar with his game, the underdog, 30 years old from South Carolina. 4 of his 6 wins have came by finish, 1 knockout, 3 submissions, and of his 2 losses, he has been knocked out once. Currently on a little 2-fight winning streak, both of them guillotine chokes. I mean, okay, Trayshawn Gore, he started kind of rough, you know, he took Brian Battle to a close decision, but ended up losing it, then was brutally knocked out by Cody Brundage in round 1, literally for no reason, just like, looked like he didn't have a chin, then October 2022, beats Josh Fremd, then November 2024, submits Antonio Tricoli. Now, Josh Fremd and Antonio Tricoli aren't that good, just do want to throw that out there, but Trayshawn Gore, I remember him on The Ultimate Fighter, he has been a savage. Savage when he fights, and he truly comes out with an intensity. I just don't know how that's going to translate when he takes on the powerhouse from Brazil in Marco Tulio, the minus 355 favorite. 30 years old as well, as mentioned. 9 fight winning streak. That's right. At one point, he was 4-1. Now he's 13-1. Dude's been an absolute tear. 10 of those 13 wins by finish, including 9 knockouts and 1 sub. Of his 1 defeat, he has been knocked out in that loss. Came on Dana White's Contender Series twice. Couldn't earn a contract on season 7, but on last season, he was able to get a spinning back kick to earn a contract. Had his debut in January against Ira Portera and knocked him out in 3 minutes. Look, Trayshawn Gore, you may be bringing the intensity, but Marco Tulio has been an absolute racehorse to start his UFC career. I would hate to see Trayshawn Gore be Marco Tulio's ceiling. So I am going to pick him to win by knockout, but I would err on the side of caution with Trayshawn Gore. That boy can always pull out a sneaky little upset. However, I just don't think he's fought in a true competitor up to high-level standings compared to who Marco Tulio's been fighting. So Marco Tulio to win that contest. From the middleweight to the flyweight, as we have Suma Darji, the Tibetan Eagle, taking on Mitch Raposo. Suma Darji, the one named man, 16-7, Mitch 9-2. 5'8 to 5'5, Suma Darji has 3 inches in height and 8 inches in reach, 72 to 64, southpaw with that left for Suma Darji. Mitch uses a switch stance. Wow. Suma Darji, minus 225 is the favorite. Mitch Raposo, plus 185 is the underdog. 29 years old from China. Of his 16 wins, he has 14 finishes, 13 knockouts, and 1 sub. I absolutely love Suma Darji. Now, I can't lie, Suma Darji, of his 7 losses, he has been submitted 6 freaking times. That's right. This boy just cannot catch a break with submissions. I mean, my goodness. Now, he's had some good wins in the UFC. Knocked out Malcolm Gordon, won 2 decisions, but for fight of the night against Matt Schnell, he was winning it, then got upset. Against Tim Elliott, was just not ready for that level. And the Charles Johnson fight, I mean, he fought Charles Johnson. Charles Johnson's incredible prime run. So what are you going to do, Suma Darji? Sue will be coming back, and I do give him a good shot here. They're having him fight someone of a lesser caliber, I'll say. But, I mean, 29 years old, he has almost 30 fights under his belt. He's been a powerhouse so far. Now, just needs to get a win, or else he's probably going to get cut. Mitch Raposo, his opponent, 26 years old from Massachusetts. 7 of his 9 wins by finish, 4 knockouts, and 3 subs, and he has 1 loss by submission. That was actually on Dana White's Contender Series to Jake Hadley in 2021, and he had a short-nosed fight in 2024 against Andre Lima, where he lost by split decision. So Mitch Raposo, very good. Just tough going for his two UFC fights, he said. You know, obviously, Jay Cadley and Andre Lima aren't easy walks in the park for people who aren't very, very talented. I would just say that this one is going to depend who shows up. Who's going to show up and want it more? And all signs would point to Madarji. Now, if you want a good upset, I do like Mitropozo at plus 185, but something about these China boys. You know, Super Darji, gotta love rooting for him. Who did I root for to beat Cody Steele? Rong Zhu, you know, the one-name Chinese fighters. They're just so fun to root for. Should be entertaining, but we'll see what takes place. Final fight of our early prelims takes us back to the middleweight division as we have Cedric the Reaper Dumas, should be Cedric DUI Dumas, as he takes on Mikel Husar Olkajacek. And Michael is the minus 190 favorite. Cedric rightfully is the underdog. Ugh, man, it's a terrible human being. Cedric 10-2, Mikel 19-9 with a no contest. 6'2 to 6 foot. Cedric has 2 inches in height and 5 inches in reach. 79-74. Orthodox for Cedric, southpaw for Michael Olkajacek. So it has been majority of Cedric Dumas in the height and reach, but in terms of how they've actually performed, we'll take a look at that. Cedric, 29 years old from Florida, 6 of his 10 wins have came by finish, 4 knockouts, 2 subs. Both of his losses have came by being finished, and or both of his losses he's been finished, once by knockout, once by submission. He last fought in August of 2024, but he did have a fight booked in January of this year. Unfortunately, it didn't come to fruition. Let me list you off some of his wins. Dennis DeLulin, Abu Azatir, Cody Brundage. He also has a loss to Ernest Sutner's Aboyev in March of 2024. Cedric Dumas, most known for people for having a DUI. I'm pretty sure he might have punched his girlfriend or something. This dude is not a good person. He's a criminal. He's got tattoos on his face and they aren't looking cool. Yeah, not a big fan of Cedric Dumas. As for, you know, his UFC career, he said he has a kickboxing background. Yet, from a majority of his fights, unless he's been knocked out or finished pretty fast, he's been grappling. And he gets taken down, he'll get a takedown. He doesn't really have a set style, and I think that might be a detriment when he takes on Mikel Olkajacek. Mikel, 30 years old from Poland. He is the favorite, but he actually now trains in Brazil. Funny enough, 15 of his 19 wins have came by finish, 14 knockouts and 1 sub. Interestingly enough, of his 9 losses, he's been finished in 7 of them, 6 by sub. So if you're going to see Cedric win anywhere, it's in the submission department. As of right now, Mikel is on a 3-fight losing streak and is 1-4 in his last 5. Now let me just read you the people he's lost to. Kyle Barallo, Michelle Pereira, Kevin Holland, and Sharon Magomedov. So, like, let's not act like he's losing to bums. By the way, fight of the night against Sharon Magomedov in August was his last defeat. I just think he's had some terrible luck. Some of his other losses, Dustin Jacoby, Jimmy Crute, Ovin St. Preux, Kirill Lountree Jr. had no contest. He's only really lost to tough competitors. Beat Chidi and Chukani in 2023, so it's been almost 2 years in August since his last win. This is where he rallies. Okay, Michael Olkajacek, he's bringing that knockout power. He's getting the win over Cedric Dumas, let me tell you. Michael Olkajacek, he is going to finally get a knockout win. I'm rooting for you, Michael. I'm pulling through. I'm pulling for you, Michael Olkajacek. That's all I'm going to say. I sincerely hope that he can win this one, because I'm not a big fan of Cedric Dumas. With that, we move from the early prelims into the regular prelims as we are kicked off with a featherweight matchup between Darren the Damage Elkins and Julian Juicy J. Rosa. These are just two guys that make the rounds fighting unranked contenders similar to themselves, and now these two are finally crossing paths. Darren Elkins, 29-11. This is major fight 41 for him. Julian, 30-12. This will be professional fight 43. Two veterans with almost 85 total fights in experience. 74-71, you get 3 inches in reach for Julian Arosa, and he also has 3 inches in height, 6'1" to 5'10". So Julian coming in with a bit of a size advantage, but will it help him? I don't know. As do Darren Elkins. Darren Elkins plus 280, Julian Arosa minus 355. Darren the Damage, actually on a win streak. Funny enough, 40 years old, born in Indiana, now trains and lives in California. Of those 29 wins, he's gotten 15 of those by finishes, 7 knockouts and 8 subs. Of his 11 defeats, he's been knocked out 4 times and submitted once. Darren, done with the UFC. Since I want you to guess, guys, just take a quick guess in your head. 3, 2, 1, 2010. That is right. This has been his 15th year in the company, and man, he's fought Charles Oliveira, Diego Brandao, Chad Mendes, Jeremy Stone, Stevens. He's fought Mirsog Betic, Michael Johnson, Volkanovski, Ryan Hall, Nate Landry, Cub Swanson, Jonathan Pierce. He's fought some tough SOBs. As of right now, he's had one fight the last 2 years, and he's currently on a two-fight winning streak. He beat TJ Brown in 2023, and in October 2024 had a fight of the night victory over Daniel Pineda. Oddly enough. Very oddly enough. That's interestingly enough to know. I wasn't aware of that. Darren Elkins coming in with not just a win, but a fight of the night win. Actually, I kind of remember that fight. It was really bloody, if I think of it correctly. If I think of it correctly, it was a pretty bloody fight. So, Darren coming into this one, he is older, but Julian Arosa, 35, is no spring chicken himself. The favorite from Washington has 25 wins by finish of his 30 total wins. Insane. 11 KOs and an outstanding 14 subs. 7 of his 11 losses, though, have came by knockout. Okay. Also on a two-fight winning streak. Both of them round one guillotine chokes. Similar to, who did we mention earlier? Treshawn Gore, two-fight win streak with two guillotine chokes. Same thing for Julian Arosa. Submitted Ricardo Ramos in March of last year and submitted Christian Rodriguez in July of last summer, which was very shocking, I might add. Julian, been with the company since 2015. I mean, he's taking on some tough guys, Sungwoo Choi, Alex Caceres, you know, Nils Olds wins over Hakeem Dawido, Charles Jourdain. Julian Arosa is pretty nasty, and as much as I love Darren Elkins, I do think he leaves himself exposed at times, and Julian's been really capitalizing on people leaving their necks open. Like I said, the 14 submission wins speak for himself, so we're going to ride with the favorite, Julian Arosa. But if you're a degenerate and you love to bet, I actually don't bet. It's actually fun. I was actually talking to a friend today and someone that they know is having a sports gambling addiction. I just want you all to know I don't actually bet, but I give you the props to bet. That's all you need to know, that if you want to make some money, you can pick all the UFC fighters I predict. As we are, 94 and 50. Not in the year, I think it is, but Julian Arosa over Darren Elkins, and I think he's going to get it done in the submission realm. That's what I think is going to take place. Moving into our next regular prelim, and it is just phenomenal, guys. I absolutely love it. Jim A10 Miller, Chase the Dream Hooper. I have been torn on this all week. I like both of these guys. It doesn't make sense that they're fighting. I really wish they weren't fighting, but they are, and we're going to have to deal with it. Jim effing Miller, we love him. 38-18 with one no contest. My man's approaching 60 professional fights. Impeccable. Chase Hooper, 15-3-1. He's been doing excellent as well. He has a 5-inch height advantage, 6'1 to 5'8, and he has 3 inches in reach, 74 to 71. Southpaw stance for both of these gentlemen. Let's start with the underdog here. Jim Miller, plus 550. Chase Hooper's at minus 800. These odds have been dwindling a tad. They were inflated where Chase was over 1,000. Jim Miller was like plus 600, and it's slowly going down, but still not completely. Jim, 41 years old, from New Jersey. Actually went to Virginia Tech for college, funny enough. 28 of his 38 wins have came by finish, 7 knockouts, and 21 subs, crazy. Of his 18 losses, he's only ever been finished 5 times, 3 by sub and twice by knockout. He's a very tough guy to finish. Most recently, beat Damon Jackson in November, where he submitted him in round number 1. And by the way, his last losses, decisions to Bobby Green and Alexander Hernandez. You can even go back to Joe Selecki and Vink Pichel in 2021, 2022. But this Jim Miller that we've grown to love really gave birth in 2021 when he went on a 3-fight winning streak, winning all of the fights in round 2, getting a finish. Then would lose to Alexander Hernandez, then followed up with 2 more finishes of Jesse Butler and Gabriel Benitez. So he's kind of gone 3 wins, a loss, 2 wins, a loss, and now a win. What will he do from here? I don't know, but Jim's been with the company since 2008. He is a legend. He is phenomenal. We love Jim Miller around here, and it'll be interesting to see how he does as he truly fights a rising prospect. It's rare they feed actual prospects to Jim Miller, and it's what they've done here, oddly enough. Chase Hooper, the minus 800 favorite, 25. There's a 16-year age gap between these guys. He's from Washington. Of those 15 wins, 12 by finish, 4 knockouts, 8 subs. And of his 3 losses, he's only ever been finished once, which was by Steve Garcia in 2022. Since moving up from featherweight, he's gone 4-0. 4-0 with 3 finishes. And by the way, his last 3 wins have all came by finish. Around 1, rear naked chokehold. Around 2, Darce chokehold. And most recently, over Clay Guida in December, a round 1 armbar, which got him a performance bonus. Interesting. Very, very interesting. You know, you just don't know what to expect with Chase. His grappling's been phenomenal. His striking's looked phenomenal. I have no idea how he didn't finish Nick Fieri in their fight in May of 2023, but That's just me. You know, his losses are to Alex Caceres, Steven Peterson, and the Steve Garcia one was rough, but he's learned since then. He's aged, he's grown wiser, and there was at one point that Chase Hooper was like 20 years old fighting in the UFC, and now he's 25, and it's just tough. It's really tough because I really want to pick Jim Miller, but something just strikes me is if he's dropping decisions to Hernandez and Bobby Green, I think that Chase Hooper has the power to finish him. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Jim Miller. I'll pick Jim Miller most days, but I do think we are going to go with Chase Hooper to win this one. In what facet? I can't be sure, but it's not even that he's a minus 800 favorite. That should be a key to care for me. I just think he has been on such a tear at lightweight, and with a win here, he's probably going to be being in the discussion for a ranked opponent. It's lightweight's a very tough division to hang in, and you know, this one should be a good one. Moving into our next contest, some ranked women in the women's strawweight division. Hello, ladies. As the number 3 ranked Virna Jandidova takes on the number 1 ranked Yan Chai. That's right. 1 versus 3 in a division on the prelims. That's women's MMA for you. Yan Chaiyonen, the number 1 ranked woman in the world, plus 125. Virna Jandidova, minus 115. Not actually in the world, but number 1 contender. Yan Chaiyonen, 19-4 with a no contest. Virna Karkara, Jandidova, 21-3, 5-5-5-3. Yan has 2 inches in height. Jandidova has 1 inch in reach, 64-63. Orthodox stance for both of our ladies. That's right, ladies. You go, girls. You go, you get in the octagon, and whoever wins will be the number 1 ranked woman in the world. Funny enough. Yan Chaiyonen, 35 years old from China, but now actually trains in California. Funny enough. 9 of those 14 wins are by, or 19. Ooh, 9 of 19, I meant to say, are by finish. 8 knockouts, 1 sub of those 4 losses. Once she's been knocked out and once she's been submitted. Only losses in the UFC, Carlos Sparza, Maria Rodriguez, and most recently Yan Chaiyonen at UFC 300. So, or not Zhang Chaiyonen, Zhang Weili. You had a little Chinese battle there. And Zhang Weili dominated, absolutely ran through her. So, did pick a win over to Tabitha Ritchie in UFC Macau in November, but it's been just decisions. Literally all decisions besides the knockout of Jessica Andrade, which earned her a title shot. That's the only finish she's ever gotten in the UFC. It's been, you know, not awful. I mean, she's picked up wins for Angela Hill, Claudia Gadella, Caroline Kowalski. Very good women, Mackenzie Dern as well. It's just not the most entertaining. And I'll say, that's the one thing that'll hold you back. You need entertainment, you need moxie, you need pizzazz. And Yan Chaiyonen doesn't possess that. And I'll tell you who else doesn't really possess that, and that's going to be Virna Jandidova, her opponent. 36 years old from Brazil. 1 KO and 14 subs give her 15 of 21 wins by finish, which I love to see, and she's never actually been finished. Over 3 losses, never been finished. She did have a fight booked against Tatiana Suarez in December of last year. That, of course, never took place. So, last time she fought, July of 2024, where she arm-barred Amanda Lemos in round number 2. On a 4-fight win streak, wins over Lupe Godinez, Marina Rodriguez, Angela Hill. Pretty good. Been pretty good. Has a couple losses to Mackenzie Dern, Angela Hill, Carla Esparza, but I wouldn't hold that against her. Look, I'm not a fan of Virna Jandidova, and I can't explain why. I wish I could. I'm just not. And when I'm going to see these two women locked in the cage, if I actually watch this fight, I'm going to be rooting for Yan Chaiyonen. And truly, when I think we get down to it technically and very skillfully, I'm going to go with Yan Chaiyonen. I just think she's able to survive any submission attempts, maybe even get a little TKO and work her way back to maybe a rematch with Zhang Weili in China. Wouldn't that be legendary? I would love that. I feel like the people would love that. This is on the prelims for a reason. Getting into our final prelim of the night, men's featherweight division, and we get a little ranked action. That's right, the number 15th ranked men's featherweight, Dan 50K Ige, love him, is the plus 140 underdog as he takes on Sean the Sniper Woodson. Dan Ige, 18-9, Sean Woodson, 13-1-1. Here you go, folks. You're going to love this one. 7-inch height advantage for Sean Woodson. 6'2" to 5'7" and 7 inches in reach. 78 to 71. Orthodox stance for both of our gentlemen. Crazy. Crazy, man. The 15th ranked Dan Ige. Love him. Hate him. Actually, if you hate Dan Ige, there's something wrong with you. 33 years old from Hawaii. 11 of his 18 wins by finish. He's gotten, where's it at? 6 knockouts, 5 subs. Of his 9 losses, dude's never been finished. I mean, Dan Ige is the toughest guy to put away. And I can't lie. He's on a 2-fight losing streak. He's 1-3 in his last 4. Last win came against Andre Feely in February of 2024. There's a lot of context here. Let me read you the only men to beat Dan Ige in the last, we can even go 5 years. Calvin Kattar, the Korean Zombie, Josh Emmett, Moskvar Evloff, Bryce Mitchell, Diego Lopez, and most recently, Lerone Murphy. Now, who did I just list off, ladies and gentlemen? How about the number 3, the number 4, the number 8, the number 10, the number 14, and the number 13 ranked contenders in the world? That is right. You truly have to be elite level to not just beat Dan Ige, but to even have an attempt at finishing him is just almost impossible to beat. So he did drop Lerone Murphy. I do want to point that out. Took Diego Lopez the distance and actually won a round over him. He's tough as nails. And though I think the main test here is that Sean Woodson has a huge size advantage, but I do think Dan Ige knows the way to work around that. Sean Woodson, the sniper, 32 years old from Missouri, currently rides a 6-fight winning streak. Of his 13 wins, he only has 5 finishes, 4 knockouts and 1 sub, and of his 1 loss, he was submitted in it back in 2020 when Julian Arosa submitted him. How about that? Julian Arosa, who we just recently mentioned and actually predicted to win. Sean Woodson actually was cut from the UFC in 2022, left, went on a 2-fight winning streak, re-signed with the company, came back, picked up a win over Dennis Bazucha, then beat Charles Jourdain in Canada, then beat Alex Caceres, and most recently knocked out Fernando Padilla in Tampa Bay in round number 1 with 2 seconds left in round number 1, I should better say. I don't know. Here's the thing. Sean Woodson has the height, he's got the size, but Dan Ige just has legit not lost to anyone who's not an elite level talent, and Dan Ige is never been on a 3-fight losing streak before. So Dan Ige, I'm a big fan of him. I don't even hate Sean Woodson. I used to hate him. Now I don't actually hate him that much, but there's definitely something inside Dan Ige that knows how to get around the size disadvantage that he will be facing. Boys, let's move out of the prelims. Let's get right on into the main card, because I'm excited for him. Should be a super exciting main card, and we kick it off with one of my favorite fighters. I love this guy, and this matchup here is very crucial to the men's light heavyweight division. As we look at the rankings, the number 8th ranked Nikita Krylov returns after 2 years to take on the number 11th ranked on his return campaign, Dominic the Devastator Reyes. Heck yeah, the Miner, Nikita Krylov. I didn't even know his nickname was the Miner. 30-9, dude, Nikita Krylov. Tons of experience. This is his 40th professional fight. Dominic Reyes, 14-4. 6'4-6'3, Reyes has 1 inch in height, and they both have a 77-inch reach and orthodox and southpaw for Krylov and Reyes, respectfully. Nikita Krylov, guys, that's right, 32 years old from Ukraine, is the minus 180 favorite, and he was actually fighting in the war. He was fighting in the war. I'm pretty sure he was on the front lines of battle. That's why you haven't seen Nikita Krylov since March of 2023. Been a fat minute. Of his 30 wins, 28 by finish, 12 knockouts, 16 subs. Of his 9 defeats, he's been finished in 7 of them, once by knockout and 6 by sub. This dude has only been the distance 4 times his entire career. 39 professional fights, only been the distance 4 times. He's action-packed. Been a while since he last fought. He did have a fight booked against Azamat Mirzakhanov last year. Now, it just never materialized. So, finally has one booked. Finally looks again in the octagon. And he's currently riding a 3-fight winning streak. Wins over Alexander Gustafsson, Volkan Ozdemir, and Ryan Spann. Last loss came to Paul Craig in 2022. A couple of others of his last losses. You got Jan Blachowicz, Glover Teixeira, Magomed Ankalaev. I mean, he's only really lost to tough competitors. Been with the UFC since 2013. Dude's been a company guy for a long time. Actually, holds a win over Walt Harris. That's right, heavyweight Walt Harris, oddly enough. Marcos Rogero de Lima, he holds a win over Johnny Walker, Owen St. Preux. He's exciting. It's just been a while. You know, you haven't fought in a while, and it could impact how he performs, especially if he's taking on someone who's riding this new wave of momentum, which he's brought upon himself. That is the Devastator, Dominic Reyes, the plus 150 underdog. 35 years old from California. 11 of his 14 wins by finish, 9 KOs, 2 submissions. Of his 4 defeats, he's been knocked out 3 times. And there's that one point, dude. Dominic Reyes was undefeated 12-0 when he fought John Jones. And I legit think this is in the top 3. You know, I've watched a lot of bad decisions, but I think this has to arguably be in the worst decision category. I watched it live. Everyone around me was watching it live, thought Dominic Reyes won. I'm next to John Jones fans that think Dominic Reyes won. And it completely changed the entire trajectory of his career. After that, knocked out by Jan Blachowicz, knocked out by Jerry Brosca, and knocked out by Ryan Spann. But then he took 2 years off. Then he took 2 years off. He returned last year in Kentucky, and I was in Chicago with my boy Jaden. Watch it live when he knocked out Dustin Jacoby in round number 2. And how did he follow it up in December to end the year? Another round 2 finish of Anthony Smith. So Dominic Reyes riding some momentum, back-to-back TKOs, and he's coming in against a guy in Krylov who's going to start faster than Jacoby and Anthony Smith did, and will be a tougher test, but there's just no way I'm picking against them. Nikita Krylov hasn't fought in 2 years. Dominic Reyes is in a career revitalization. The train does not stop here for Dominic Reyes, because once it stops, it's probably going to start to stop repeatedly. I just think Nikita is maybe going to rush into a punch or something. He might have been gassed himself out trying to go for a quick submission or knockout or something. I just love Dominic Reyes, and I will be picking him to win his matchup. After that, guys, it's just immaculate. It's immaculate how amazing this card is. Men's featherweight division, we head to it. The number 13th ranked Bryce Mitchell in action. Thug Nasty as he takes on Gene Lord Silva. And Bryce right now, plus 225. The odds have dropped a tad. Silva's at minus 275 last time I checked, but odds are probably different everywhere you go. Bryce Mitchell, 17-3. Gene Silva, 15-2. 5'10 to 5'7. Bryce has 3 inches in height and has 1 inch in reach. Southpaw for Bryce, orthodox for Gene Silva. This is tricky, guys. This is tricky because we all know that this fight was set up because Bryce Mitchell inadvertently said, I'm not even going to try and defend the guy. Like, he basically said that he likes Hitler. It was taken very out of context, but nonetheless, he did say something along those lines. And the UFC wanted, fans wanted him to be cut from the UFC. And Dana's like, we promote free speech here. All right, I don't agree with what he said. I'm sure most of you don't agree with what he said. This is a free speech company. How about we just put him against one of the killers on the come up, and that's Gene Silva. And it seems fitting. It seems fitting because if Bryce Mitchell wins this, he is gonna be letting people hear it. Let me tell you that. But Thug Nasty, 30 years old from Arkansas, 10 finishes and 17 wins. I rarely see finishes from Bryce Mitchell though. Can't even lie. He does have 1 knockout, which he got in his last fight, and 9 submissions. Both his losses, he was finished in. So Bryce Mitchell obviously came in undefeated, went on a crazy run, got a twister submission, fought on UFC 249. What was that Charles Rosa fight? He had some insane. It was, what was it, 12 minutes? It was only 12 minutes and 51 seconds, or was it? Oh, I thought it was more. He's had one fight where he had like 14 minutes of control time. It was crazy. Beat Edson Barbosa, beat Andre Feely, then ran into Ito Pira in December of 2022. Little did we know how good Ito Pira is. And honestly, he took Ito Pira down and was standing with him. Now, don't get me wrong, he got dropped and submitted an arm triangle, but he still stood with him. Follow that up, beat Dan Ige. Well, I tell you, you got to be good to beat Dan Ige. Then in December of 2023, of course, one of the nastiest knockouts in UFC history, Josh Emmett, we actually thought killed him. We thought Bryce Mitchell died that night. What was that, UFC 296, I want to say, Edwards Covington. We thought that he died, but he didn't die. Came back in December of last year, so 2024, and he took on Crown Gracie, and Crown Gracie was absolutely beat. He was just awful in that fight, but hey, Bryce was able to get around it. Actually got a round 3 TKO, 39 seconds in, which was phenomenal to see. Got a little slam into some elbows, so Bryce back in action. It ain't going to be easy, but he's a grappler, and he's going to have to use this grappling because the man he takes on, Gene Lord Silva, this guy, the favorite, is so scary. So scary. 28 years old from Brazil, 12-fight winning streak. There's that one point. Gene Silva was 3-2 in his MMA career, and now he's 15-2. It's immaculate. 12 KOs, 2 subs. That's right, 14 of 15 wins by finish. It's utterly incredible. Gene Silva came into the UFC in January of 2024 and went 3-0. On the year, knocked out Weston Wilson, knocked out Charles Johnson, and then brutalized Drew Dober so bad they had to stop the fight in round number 3. Returned in February, taking on Melsik Bagdasarian, and beat the brakes off of him, okay? It humbled him so incredibly. And Gene Silva is just ready for that next level. He truly is. And I would have preferred a striker. I would have preferred a Calvin Kattar, a Giga Chikadze, but no, it's Bryce Mitchell. So you're either going to see Gene Silva really not know how to defend takedowns because Bryce is immaculate at takedowns, especially control time, or you're going to see Gene Silva do what he does and get a knockout. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't hate Bryce Mitchell at all. In fact, I do kind of like the guy. Now, I don't agree with anything he said, but I just, some tells me he might pull off the upset, but I'm not betting against any fighting nerds. Of course, if anyone doesn't know the fighting nerds, Carlos Prates, Carlo Bahio, Gene Silva, and Mauricio Ruffi, they have just been so incredible, and I'm just going to continue to pick them until they lose. So maybe this will be the fight that Gene Silva finally loses, but all signs point towards him knocking out Bryce Mitchell. Usually he's either a key indicator, he gets the knockout, or he gets brutally defeated somehow. But this is a fantastic fight. All eyes on this one. Following that, it just gets even better as Yair El Pantera Rodriguez, the number 5 ranked featherweight in the world, welcomes to the UFC Patricio Pitbull Ferreira. That is right, Patricio Pitbull in a UFC octagon. It's impeccable. It's honestly impeccable. This is a legend of Bellator, fought in PFL. Just a guy who has never just been in the UFC. He's always been a top guy outside the UFC. Now that he's here, it's going to be very interesting to see how he does. Let's look at the tape here. Yair, 20-6, won no contest. Patricio, 36-7. Insane. 36-7 at the top level. That's impressive. 5'11 to 5'6. Yair has 5 inches in height, 4 inches in reach, 71-67, and they both stand in an orthodox position. Yair, minus 200. Patricio Pitbull, plus 165. So Yair, number 5 ranked featherweight on the planet. 32 years old, from Mexico, but actually trains out of Chicago. I don't know if he lives there, but he does train out of Chicago. 13 of his 20 wins by finish, 8 KOs, 5 subs. And out of his 5 defeats, he's actually been finished 4 times. 3 of them by knockout, once by submission. Yair, been with the UFC since 2014. Was at one point on an incredible run before he ran into Frankie Edgar, was unable to pull off an insane last-second knockout over Chan Sung Jung, had some awkward run-ins with Jeremy Stevens, then was able to take on Max Holloway in a close fight of the night. Following that up, he beat Brian Ortega and won an interim title fight against Josh Emmett before running to Alexander Volkanovski. But this was prime Volk. Okay, Volk ran through him. Last time he fought, February of 2024, where he was submitted by Brian Ortega in round number 3 in one of the biggest choke jobs I've ever seen. Yair had Ortega out of there in round number 1 and just freaking lost it. So in a weird way, Yair is on a 2-fight losing streak, which is, just makes no sense. And he's been finished in round 3 in both of those fights. So maybe round 3 is the key round to watch out for him in. But hey, Yair inactivity has kind of hurt him. It's just kind of been whatever. We'll see how he does as he takes on someone who is 5 years older than him. Look, he's 37 years old for Patricio Pitbull. Now from Brazil, 14 of 36 wins by finish. I wish that, 24 of 36, my one looked like a zero. 12 KOs, 12 subs, 24 of 36 wins by finish. That's what I like to see, Pitbull. Heck yeah. And of his 7 losses, he's only been finished 3 times, 2 by knockout, 1 by sub. Last time he fought, March of 2024, where he got a round 3 TKO over Jeremy Kennedy, I want to say someone, but welcome to the UFC, my friend. He's 1 fight win streak, if you will. Taking on Yair, look, he's similar to MVP. He's similar to Michael Chandler when he joined the UFC. He's Kaya Sakura. These guys that come over, it's always entertaining. Kaio Higuchi when he ends up fighting. I love to pick them. There's just something about picking these guys I just absolutely adore. And I've never picked Yair. Just never really picked Yair. You know, I think I had him beating Brian Ortega. Then he lost, but the Volk fight, the, what other fight did he have? He had the Josh Emmett fight, I didn't pick him. You know, I've never really seen it with Yair. And honestly, the last fight out really showed him quitting. And I think if Pitbull's going to get a finish here, might be on the ground. So we're going to go with Patricio Pitbull. So fun to pick the new gun in the UFC. But if Yair gets a win, hey, he might be getting a title shot, because I keep getting Twitter updates that apparently Diego Lopez and Rodriguez are fighting at the press conference. I got to wrap this podcast up so I can go look at all of those tweets. But before I do that, let's get into the fight that is tweaking me. It's tripping me out so hard. I've been losing my mind over this fight. The co-main event, it might be 5 rounds. I cannot confirm nor deny. But the number 12 ranked and the number 7th ranked, Paddy Pimblett and Michael Chandler, go to battle in the men's lightweight division. And Michael Chandler, plus 125, minus 150. Paddy is currently the favorite. Could you believe it? I am Michael Chandler. 23-9. Paddy, the Paddy Pimblett, 22-3, man. Stacking up them wins. 5'8 to 5'10. Paddy's got 2 inches in height and 2 inches in reach, 71 to 73. Both men use that right hand in the orthodox fighting position. Let's start with the number 7th ranked Michael Chandler, Iron Mike, the underdog, 38, man. 38. Him and Pitbull getting up there in age. From Las Vegas, 18 of his 23 wins by finish, 11 KOs, 7 submissions. Of his 9 defeats, he's been knocked out 4 times and submitted once. So Chandler, we know Chandler's had a rough time in the UFC. He is currently 1-4 in his last 5 fights, 2-4 in the UFC. But there's a lot of context here, all right? His losses, Charles Oliveira, Justin Gaethje, Dustin Poirier. Those are three of your Mount Rushmore guys in the men's lightweight division, okay? Those are three of the most legendary guys. Dan Hooker, Tony Ferguson, he's never not fought in someone, much less, do I say top 10, top 5, okay? In crazy, just a crazy work schedule for Michael Chandler. Lost 2 years of his prime waiting for a Conor McGregor fight, which never came and never will. Ended up fighting Charles Oliveira. And even though it was a fight of the night, you know, I was watching. It was entertaining. Yet when you look back, it's just Charles Oliveira grappling him to death. It really is. And I was perplexed as I went back and I was like, nothing really happened that fight. Round 5 was the highlight round of the entire fight. So we'll see how Chandler does. It's all signs would point towards him winning, but honestly, he's got the feet. We all know he's gotten Paddy beat on the feet. But there's just one place he doesn't have him beat, and that's the ground. So, Paddy Pimblett, let's take a quick look at him. Look, we love Paddy. We love Paddy. We have a Paddy Pimblett shirt. 30 years old, the favorite from Liverpool. 8-fight winning streak for Paddy the Baddie. 5 KOs and 11 subs. 16 of 22 wins by finish. Love to see that. A lot of high-level finishers in this fight. Of his 3 defeats, he's only ever been finished once. It was by submission. So far, a perfect 6-0 in the UFC, and after starting his career on a 3-fight finish streak, would run to a tough decision against Jared Gordon, and then a tough decision against Tony Ferguson, where he really, really had to pull it together. Eventually took on Bobby Green in July of last year, where he picked up a round 1 triangle choke. Now, I do think that some people are overlooking is that they're saying Bobby Green went into Paddy Pimblett, he made the decision to go to the ground, and Paddy just capitalized. Michael Chandler will do the same thing, shooting for a takedown. And the thing we've noticed with Michael Chandler is, you know, after he punches you for a while, he will shoot for a takedown. Did it with Poirier, did it with Gaethje. What Paddy will do is he will hook you in that guillotine. He will go into an arm triangle, and he will try and submit you. So this fight comes down to, is Paddy going to get the submission or is Chandler going to get the knock? And I know people are bringing up like, oh, well, Charles Oliveira couldn't finish him for 5 straight rounds. Let's not forget Dustin Poirier, of all people, submitted him in round number 3. So Chandler can be submitted and most likely will be submitted. So I would love to pick Michael Chandler. I think if he does knock out Paddy, I'll be a bit sad I didn't call it, but I have rode with Paddy in all 6 UFC fights, and son of a gun, I can't stop now, fellas. Give me Paddy Pimblett, round 3 submission all freaking day. If all the Paddy fans are dead in the world, then I'm gone too. But if there's one left, I'm still alive at least, unless I'm dead or something, however the saying goes. Ladies and gentlemen, the main event will be up next, and it will be legendary. It will be good, and it's unexpected. Might I add, you know, you get the number 1 ranked Volkanovski, number 3 ranked Diego Lopez. By the way, Volkanovski, number 11, pound for pound fighter, still on the plane. He's still in that men's pound for pound. Coming in, minus 120 for Volk, plus 100 for Lopez. These odds have been super even, similar to Chandler and Pimblett. Alexander the Great, Volkanovski, the former men's featherweight champion, 26-4. Diego Lopez, 26-6, mind you, 6 years younger. Dude has so much fight experience. 5'11 to 5'6, 5 inches in height for Diego Lopez, 1 inch in reach, 72 to 71. Orthodox hands for both of our fighters. Volk, one of the goats. You can even call him the featherweight goat. I mean, it's kind of tough to not call Utopia the featherweight goat because he has knocked out both of the featherweight goats that are in the debate. But nonetheless, we know how good Alexander Volkanovski is. 36 years old from Australia, 16 of his 26 wins by finish, 13 KOs and 3 subs, and of his 4 losses, 3 of them have came by knockout. And might I also add, sadly, he is 1-3 in his last 4, currently on a 2-fight losing streak as well, where he's been finished in round 1 and round 2. Very sad, but look at the guys to beat him. Well, Makhachev and Topura, two, the number 1 and number 2 in the UFC right now. That's right, I'm calling number 1 and number 2 fighters in the UFC right now. Crazy run for Volk. He was on like a 13-12-fight winning streak or something. Dude's an absolute legend. Hasn't really lost to an up-and-coming contender before. Topura, we knew how good he was when he was ended up fighting him, but I mean, Max Holloway, Chan Sung Jung, Brian Ortega, Jose Aldo, Chad Mendes, they've all felt the power of the great Alexander Volkanovski. And last time out, look, he was doing great in round 1 against Topira before he got caught. Similar thing against Makhachev in their fight in October of 2023. So if Volk's going to win this one, just can't get caught by Diego Lopez. And Brian Ortega kind of gave the blueprint, is that if you can eat the first few, you could probably survive. But you have to remember that not everyone has a chin like Brian Ortega. And Volk has been knocked out cold, might I add, his last 2 fights. that does do some damage. And his opponent is no spring chicken, all right, let me tell you. Or he is a spring chicken. He's no old head, if you will reverse what I just said. Diego Lopez, 30 years old, born in Brazil, now trains in Mexico. 10 KOs, 12 subs. That is right, 22 of his 26 wins by finish. Of his 6 defeats, he's been knocked out twice. But so far in the UFC, that has not happened. He took his UFC debut on short notice, defeating Mosvar Evlov in a fight of the night, which was crazy. He would then win his next 3 fights, 2 by submission, 1 by submission, 2 by knockout, all of them under 90 seconds, a minute and 30 seconds. That's right, crazy enough. He would take on Dan Ige on 4 hours' notice. He let Dan Ige step in and fight him. He beat him. And then Brian Ortega at the Sphere. People are so confused this day how Brian Ortega did get knocked out. But Diego Lopez hits like a brick wall. I mean, I think he might hide nunchucks or whatever you want to call them in his, what do you call them? What do people put on their hands? Oh my gosh, they slide around all their fans. Brass knuckles. He has brass knuckles in his gloves or something. But Diego Lopez is an absolute killer, man. Absolute killer. And I'd have thought you'd be getting Diego Lopez versus Ilia Topuria, Volkanovski versus Ilia Topuria. Nonetheless, you get these two fighting while Ilia Topuria goes down to lightweight division, chasing even more glory. So when it comes to this fight, oh man, it sucks. It sucks. And I would, similar to a lot of fights on this card, I would love to see Volkanovski win. Like, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to be more sad if Volk loses than if Lopez loses. But that doesn't change the fact I'm picking Diego Lopez. I don't know how Volkanovski can get around the fact that Topuria and Makhachev put him out cold. And it's very rare you see someone, especially at his age, 36, who was at the top, knocked out cold twice. The Topuria one even worse than the Makhachev one. And then taking out another guy, Diego Lopez, who we know hits hard. We know how hard Diego Lopez hits. So this should be fantastic, but I am going to go with Diego Lopez. I do think Lopez will get it done, but don't get me wrong. I'm very neutral on a lot of these fights. I just think we're going to get a lot of good fights. But when I look at these fights, Dominic Reyes, Nikita Krylov, I would be rooting for Dominic Reyes. Bryce Mitchell, Gene Silva, I don't know, you know. Honestly, Gene Silva's been making himself kind of unlikable. So as much as I picked him, I don't know, might have a bit of an edge towards Bryce Mitchell. Pitbull and Rodriguez, I'd be rooting for Pitbull all day. Paddy and Chandler, I'll be rooting for Paddy. And Lopez Volk, I'll be rooting for Lopez. But we're in for a fantastic pay-per-view. It's primed to be potentially the best of the year, but I'm going to be honest, guys. It's going to be tough to top UFC 311. It delivered pretty dang good. And honestly, topping 313 shouldn't be too hard. So that's all we got for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Let me know who you guys are going to be picking in these fights. Let me know how you guys are doing. What do you want me to talk about on the podcast? I'll talk about anything. I'll interview anyone. I just love speaking, and I hope you love hearing my sweet voice. Oh, well, my mother calls it her sweet voice. Alrighty, guys, that's all I got for you. Kick some butt out there. Make the world better. And as always, I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.